If you think about it, it's not all that surprising that Jesus was often confused for Elijah. Here's Skip Heitzig to explain.
Now, Elijah was a miracle worker. 8 miracles are mentioned in this book that the prophet Elijah performed. And that's why when Jesus came on the scene, they said, "Are you John the Baptist? Are you Elijah? Or one of the prophets?" Because Jesus, though he was a man of love, was also fiery and articulate and also a miracle worker.
Make the connection.
It's never easy to follow after a great man or woman. Just ask any Denver Bronco fan how hard it's been for quarterbacks who have tried to follow after the legacy left behind by John Elway. Or think about what it must have been like to have to leave the nation after someone like George Washington or Abraham Lincoln. Well, today in The Connection, Skip Heitzig explores a section of Israel's history that reveals just how hard it was for kings to follow in the footsteps of David and Solomon. But before we begin, here's how you can help people all over the world follow in the footsteps of Jesus.
Paris, the city of lights, the city of love, but a city that needs to hear about real love, the agape love of God. Paris may have a reputation of being a city for its many streets, canals, and bridges, and romantic ambiance, but only the love of Christ will satisfy our desire for true love. Help us share this good news in the streets of Paris and around the world as a member of the Global Connectors. Join today for just $25 a month. And when you do, not only will you help us share the truth about love with people all over the world, you'll also receive a free resource each month. This month, you'll receive a teaching from Michael Dente from Calvary Chapel, Paris.
In a city so known, therefore, for its immorality, its intellectualism, and its riches, it would appear that Paul only saw one solution to cure their spiritual ills, and that was to know Christ, to know Jesus Christ, and to know Him crucified.
When people think romance, they often think of Paris. But in order to truly experience love, what we need is not a trip to a city of romance, but a trip to the cross. Help us share the good news of God's love in Paris and around the world as a member of the Global Connectors. Call today, 1-800-922-1888, or visit connectionradio.org.
Well, connectionradio.org not only has all the information about Global Connectors, but all our resources available as well. Find out more at connectionradio.org. Yes, following the footsteps of a great man or woman is a daunting task, and it's one that David and Solomon's successors just weren't up to fulfilling. What did that mean for Israel, and what can we learn from this period of history? Stay with us to find out.
And make the connection.
Open your Bibles to 1 Kings, and let's join Skip Heitzig as we continue through the Bible from 30,000 feet.
1 Kings 11, verse 1. But Solomon, and you see that word, but, that's not a good way to begin a sentence. That's what my English teacher used to tell me. But that's okay, it's in the Bible, so it's. Yeah, I'm not going to correct God. But I say it's not a good word to begin a chapter after it says Solomon did this and he did that and it was wonderful and marvelous and a temple was built. But, that means in contrast to all the good stuff comes the bad stuff. But King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonites, Termites. Oh, they're not there. Hittites. From the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn your hearts after their gods. Solomon clung to these in love. Solomon had a divided heart. The divided heart led him to a divided marriages, plural. Divided marriages led to divided affections. The divided affections led to a divided nation. That's the legacy Solomon left, a divided nation. His heart was divided, and everything else around him showed what was going on inside the leader's heart. He had 700 wives. Wow. Oh, my. Well, would you want 700 husbands, women? Men, would you want 700 wives? I think we can all say amen, no. That's just the beginning. He had princesses and 300 porcupines, that is concubines, though I'm sure they were all a little bit edgy. And his wives turned away his heart. Now get this profile. Here's a man very gifted creatively, very gifted intellectually, very weak morally, because he has a divided heart. He became self-obsessed. And here's a guy who wrote the book of wisdom, the book of Proverbs, the book on marriage, book on raising children, the book on wisdom and staying away from temptation, all of those great things in Proverbs. I read every day a proverb, every single day. There's 31 Proverbs. There's 30 days in a month or 31 days in a month. It's perfect. I just read it 12 times a year. But here's a guy who wrote the book, didn't follow his own advice. Didn't follow. He should have read Proverbs. It's ironic, isn't it? Have you heard the story a few years back, came on the Associated Press, about a fella in San Jose, California named Luke Goodrich. Luke Goodrich was burning garbage out in the backyard. It's illegal by California state law to burn garbage outside in the city precincts of San Jose, California. A wind came up, spread the fire around. 100 acres were burned. 6 helicopters, 400 firefighters later, they put it out. What's ironic is that Luke Goodrich was then the captain of the San Jose Fire Department. That's a lot like Solomon. You see what he did, and it's ironic. He wrote the book, but he didn't follow it. Chapter 12 is a key chapter. The kingdom is divided. There's two men in this chapter. You can remember them because they devise a lineage from here on of other kings. Jeroboam, the son of Solomon, or Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, up north, the 10 northern tribes, and Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. Now, let me tell you something about Solomon's son, Rehoboam. This new young king. Solomon started right. Rehoboam didn't even start right. Rehoboam did not do what his dad did. His dad at least prayed to God and asked him for wisdom. Rehoboam didn't. In fact, he didn't even take advice from wiser, older people. He wanted just sort of the young, hip, slick, mod, his compadres to give him advice. Everybody told him, you better ease up on the tax burden because your dad was a tax and spend king. And unless you ease up, you're going to split this nation. He didn't listen to him. He said, you think my dad was bad? I'll be worse, thinking he'd control by force. Well, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, came in and said, forget you, and took a whole host of people with him up north. The kingdom then becomes divided. Now you have from here on out two countries with two kingdoms, 10 tribes in the north, 2 in the south, kingdom of Israel in the north, kingdom of Judah in the south. Now Rehoboam was smart enough to stay in Jerusalem because he knew the emotional heart of Israel was still the temple, and people would feel tugged and feel like they want to go back to the temple to worship. But Jeroboam solved the problem. He said, I'll put two new sites of worship up in the north, one at Bethel in the center of the country and one at Dan in the north of the country. We'll have a priesthood and a temple and false gods and goddesses, and a whole idolatrous system was developed from here on out. And now the rest of the book, well, now wait a minute. Look at verse 16 of chapter 12. We're not quite done there yet. Now, when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, "What share have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now, see to your own house, O David." So Israel departed to their tents. But Rehoboam reigned over the children of Israel who dwelled in the cities of Judah. Jeroboam was an opportunist. I know it sort of sounds confusing. You got like the Boehm boys. Jerry up north, Jerry Boehm, and Rhea Boehm down south. They're not even related. One's the son of Solomon, one's the son of Naboth, as I said. Jeroboam was the opportunist. He saw weakness in the kingdom. He saw weakness in the leadership of this young king, and he thought, I can get in, and I can have a place. So the kingdom was split. Now, the rest of the book, chapters 13 through 22, is a running parallel accounts of these two kingdoms. So in chapter 12, we have the split. Chapter 13 through 22, we have two tracks, 8 kings in the north, 5 kings in the south. And they're going to be mentioned again in the book of Chronicles. It confuses the reader, the rest of the book. So I'm just sort of summing it up for you. It confuses because the narrative bounces from north to south to north to south to sometimes south, 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 north, 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 south. And there's these two rival kingdoms always fighting each other. That comprises the rest of the book. There's 8 kings that are mentioned in the rest of 1 Kings. 8 kings in the north. And here's a list of them. Jeroboam, Nadab, Baasha, Elah, Zimri, Omri, Ahab, Ahaziah. All of those are mentioned. That finishes out the book. None of those kings that I mentioned were any good. They were all rotten, bad, junky leaders. Not a good thing is said about them. They're all idolaters. They're all pagan worshipers. Not anything good is said about all 8 of those kings. They get worse and worse and worse. There's 5 kings mentioned in the rest of the book down south in Judah, beginning with Rehoboam down south, Abijam, Asa, Jehoshaphat. That's it. Those are 4 kings, not 5, excuse me. But there's only 2 of those that are right in God's eyes. 8 up north, none of them are good. Only 2 out of the 4 down south are mentioned as good. Chapter 15, verse 11, it says of Asa, he did right in the eyes of the Lord. That's also mentioned of King Jehoshaphat in chapter 22, verse 43. Now, there's one king in all of these that I've highlighted and sort of summed up. There's one king who was one of the worst of all that surfaces and is highlighted here. And his name is King Ahab. Remember the name Ahab? He married a really rotten wife named Jezebel. And her name has become synonymous with an evil kind of a woman. Now, Jezebel was Sidonian. She comes from another country up north. She was a Baal worshiper. And King Ahab of Israel married Jezebel and took on not only this new wife, but her worship system and introduced pagan Baal worship to the nation of Israel. It got really bad. And when things get really bad, God has a really good plan. And he sent in a really bad time a really good dude, a prophet by the name of Elijah, who was articulate, fiery, and uncompromising. Chapter 17 through 22 record the conflict between the man of God and the man of the world, between Elijah and King Ahab. Now, Elijah was a miracle worker. 8 miracles are mentioned in this book the prophet Elijah performed. And that's why when Jesus came on the scene, they said, "Are you John the Baptist? Are you Elijah? Or one of the prophets?" Because Jesus, though he was a man of love, was also fiery and articulate and also a miracle worker. Well, Elijah did things like suspended the rain for 3.5 years. That takes us to this scene, which brings a confrontation in chapter 18 on Mount Carmel. Now, suspending the rain was an embarrassment to a Baal worshiper. You know why? Because they believed that the god Baal controlled the rain. Was the storm god. The reason it rains on earth is because Baal is favorable. When it doesn't rain for 3.5 years and they've been praying to Baal, they're awfully embarrassed. That's good. Now it brings a confrontation. So Elijah says in chapter 18 to Ahab, tell you what, let's assemble all of the false prophets, 450 prophets of Baal and Ashtoreth on top of Mount Carmel, and let's have a showdown here. Let's have a battle of the gods. Because they were singing, my God's better than your God. And Elijah was going, uh-uh. And now it's one against hundreds of false worshipers. So chapter 18 is classic. Verse 17, look at that quickly. When Ahab saw Elijah, chapter 17, or verse 17 of chapter 18. When Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, is that you, O troubler of Israel? See, to King Ahab, the man of God was the problem. When actually Ahab was his own worst enemy. And he answered, I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have. And you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and you have followed the Baals. See how fiery he is? He's standing in front of a king who could lop his head off. He goes, I'm not the problem. You're the problem. You and your dad and everybody else. Pagan worshipers. So they have this meeting on Mount Carmel. Verse 25, Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose one bull for yourself and prepare it first, for you are many, and call on the name of your God, but put no fire under it. They took the bull that was given. They prepared it. They called on the name of Baal from morning even until noon. That's a long time. That's a long prayer meeting. Hours and hours and hours. Oh, Baal, hear us. But there was no voice. No one answered. They leaped about on the altar which they had made. Verse 27. And so it was at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, he's an interesting character. He's certainly not this guy who says, I don't want to offend him. And he's thinking, how can I offend them? What could I say that would really be a mock to them? And he says, cry louder, for he's a god. Either he's meditating or he's busy. By the way, depending on which translation you read, it can be very colorful. The New Living Translation translates it, perhaps he's relieving himself. That's the New Living Translation. That's quite a mockery, isn't it? Or he's on a journey. Or perhaps he's sleeping and you got to wake him up. So they cried aloud and they cut themselves, as was their custom, with knives and lances until blood gushed out on them. Gross. Ineffective. In steps Elijah. And in verses 36 and 37, utters a simple prayer. A total of 63 words. Not from morning till noon, just 63 words. Just a two-verse prayer. And his prayer worked. And this is exactly what James had in mind in James chapter 5. When he said, the fervent, effectual prayer of a righteous man avails much. And he points to Elijah doing this. Just, Lord, hear me. Please hear me. Show them there's a God in Israel. Show them that their God's false. Come through and manifest yourself to your people and your glory. And God caused fire to fall down from heaven, consumed the sacrifice on the altar. Everybody was blown away. They fled in different directions. Elijah chased them down and killed them all. Well, he did. It's weird because you get to chapter 19 and he's running from Jezebel. He runs down to Mount Sinai and he's depressed. And here he can stand up to 450 prophets of Baal and go after him. And then there's a woman who yells at him. And he flees down to Mount Sinai. And and he actually wants to die. He's so tired. He's so drained. He had a long journey. He had probably hyped up adrenaline for so long. And the aftermath of that sometimes is not any more uncommon than what we read here. He says, God, kill me, kill me, kill me. That's the solution. He feels so depressed. He's so selfish. He wants to end his life. Ask God to kill him. The solution isn't his own death. The solution is dying to self. That's why God says, what are you talking about? Get up. I have a lot of people who haven't called on the name of Baal, haven't bowed the knee to Baal. Go unite with them. But you ought to know this as we close, that Elijah appears twice later on in the New Testament, one on the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus and Moses. And they talk about the kingdom, and Peter goes, this is so cool. Let's build 3 condominiums right here. This is awesome. You know that story. And then he appears the second time, I believe, in the book of Revelation as one of the 2 witnesses. He's able to call fire down from heaven. He's able to stop the rain for 3.5 years. Very reminiscent of the prophet Elijah. And he was the greatest prophet to Israel, and I believe he'll show up at the arena in the last days. Okay, I want to end tonight's study by showing you a contrast. Okay, this is the Bible from 30,000 feet. And one of the things I want to show you is how the Bible all fits together, right? So let me end on this point. I want to compare 2 things said, one from the Old Testament, spoken here in chapter 8, Solomon's Prayer, and something Paul said. Now listen to Solomon's Prayer. This is chapter 8, verses 31 and 32. Solomon prays to God, and he says, God, when anyone sins in this country, this nation of Israel, when anyone sins here in heaven, act and judge your servants, condemning the wicked and bringing his way on his head, but justifying the righteous, giving him according to his righteousness. Did you hear that prayer? God, if people blow it, condemn the wicked and justify the righteous. Okay, that's Solomon. That's the Old Testament. But you get to the New Testament, and through Jesus Christ, we discover God justifies the wicked. God justifies the wicked. God declares them righteous through Jesus Christ. That's the difference. Listen to this. Romans chapter 4, verse 5. Paul says, but to him who does not work, but believes on him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is accounted for righteousness. See, here Solomon says, no, justify the godly and condemn the wicked. Paul says, God will justify the ungodly. Folks, God doesn't justify the righteous. You know why? There aren't any. There aren't any. God doesn't justify the righteous because there aren't any. Romans 3, verse 10, there is none righteous, no, not one. So God will say now through Jesus Christ, unlike the Old Testament Solomon, I'll declare the unrighteous righteous. How? By applying the righteous, perfect, sinless life of Christ to their account and having Jesus take their sins. That's the great exchange. That's the difference between the old and the new. So listen, politicians didn't create the chaos. Satan did. Politicians may help a bit, but Satan created it. Jesus came to the chaos, right? He came into the cosmos, the world. Jesus stepped into the chaos with the cross. He put the cross in the chaos, and that's what brings healing.
And that same cross of Christ can also bring healing into the chaos of your life. Jesus Christ was willing to bear the cross simply because he loves, and he didn't want to see any of us end up in hell. So turn to the cross today. Find healing and forgiveness for your sin. If you'd like to talk with someone about how to do that, give us a call at 1-800-922-1888. Or you can also learn more when you click on the Know God link at connectionradio.org. Plus, if you contact us for the first time today, we'll also send you a free gift from Skip Heitzig. It's a free teaching called Destination Ruth from our current series, The Bible from 30,000 Feet. And it's our gift to anyone who contacts us for the first time today. So give us a call, 1-800-922-1888, or write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. And that's also how you can get in touch with us for a copy of today's message from the book of 1 Kings. We'll send you a copy for just $6, including shipping, when you call 1-800-922-1888. Or for other resources from our series, The Bible from 30,000 Feet, you can also visit BibleFrom30K.org.
Well, that's going to wrap up our time for today, so thank you for joining us. And don't forget, if you contact us for the first time, we'll send you that free bonus teaching from Skip. So call 1-800-922-1888 or write P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199.
And make the connection.
We'll continue through the book of 1 Kings next time as we learn what happened to Israel after the reign of David. On The Connection, a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.